Two men, passionate actors, closest of friends. Born just 4 days apart, they share more than just being of the same generation, but a legacy that helped to define many generations. Now, they can finally look back with the only other person on the planet who can truly identify with their amazing journey. To boldly go where neither man has gone before, and along the way, reveal the secrets behind the voyage of a lifetime.
This is the most personal insight that they'll get into, certainly into this relationship, and into aspects of myself and Bill that they've never been aware of, never been privy to before.
I got divorced in the middle of the series and took affection from wherever I could find it. Not every week from every one of those beautiful girls who were on our show.
In an unprecedented one-on-one conversation filmed at Leonard Nimoy's home, the two most popular actors in the Star Trek universe share never-before-told stories about 35 years of friendship, fellow cast members, and the public and private impact the historic entertainment franchise has had on their lives.
They were contract people studying to see, how much are we paying him? And if he asks for any more, tell him we'll get somebody else to wear the ears, that kind of thing. He wants a phone in his dressing room. Is it in the contract? No. No phone. No. And there was no give. There was no dealing in a familial way. That made me very confused.
And angry.
Very angry. And I went into therapy over it.
Our lives have followed very similar patterns in our marriages, our children, our financial circumstances, our emotional circumstances, our careers. So it's interesting to see Star Trek and our lives from each other's perspectives.
Here's my Vulcan.
Oh,
cap.
No. Leonard, Vulcan, the USS Vulcan.
Yeah.
Did they name it after the
Coast Guard ship? Coast Guard ship called the Vulcan.
And then you got the Enterprise.
Well, of course.
This whole house is dedicated to Star Trek.
No, not the whole house. Just a little corner.
Both Shatner and Nimoy agreed the only format that would allow them to share the most private details of their lives was an intimate discussion without any moderator.
No way anybody could predict this journey, this long, this 35-year relationship. Impossible. I thought it was coming to an end several times. We were canceled at the end of the second season. I thought it's over. We came back for a third season and were canceled again. I thought, well, that's the end of that. End of syndication happened. And we did the Star Trek motion picture. There was no plan to do a series of films. We kept meeting these endings and going on.
You're my best friend.
That, if it were for nothing else, right?
Yeah.
If it were nothing else, it would have been...
This makes it
worthwhile. Mostly worthwhile. Yeah.
Two men, passionate actors, closest of friends. Born just 4 days apart, they share more than just being of the same generation, but a legacy that helped to define many generations. Now, they can finally look back with the only other person on the planet who can truly identify with their amazing journey. To boldly go where neither man has gone before, and along the way, reveal the secrets behind the voyage of a lifetime.
This is the most personal insight that they'll get into, certainly into this relationship, and into aspects of myself and Bill that they've never been aware of, never been privy to before.
I got divorced in the middle of the series and took affection from wherever I could find it. Not every week from every one of those beautiful girls who were on our show.
In an unprecedented one-on-one conversation filmed at Leonard Nimoy's home, the two most popular actors in the Star Trek universe share never-before-told stories about 35 years of friendship, fellow cast members, and the public and private impact the historic entertainment franchise has had on their lives.
They were contract people studying to see, how much are we paying him? And if he asks for any more, tell him we'll get somebody else to wear the ears, that kind of thing. He wants a phone in his dressing room. Is it in the contract? No. No phone. No. And there was no give. There was no dealing in a familial way. That made me very confused.
And angry.
Very angry. And I went into therapy over it.
Our lives have followed very similar patterns in our marriages, our children, our financial circumstances, our emotional circumstances, our careers. So it's interesting to see Star Trek and our lives from each other's perspectives.
Here's my Vulcan.
Oh, no. Leonard, Vulcan, the USS Vulcan.
Yeah.
Did they name it after the
Coast Guard ship? Coast Guard ship. Called the Vulcan.
And then you got the Enterprise.
Well, of course.
This whole house is dedicated to Star Trek.
No, not the whole house. Just a little corner.
Both Shatner and Nimoy agreed the only format that would allow them to share the most private details of their lives was an intimate discussion without any moderator.
No way anybody could predict this journey, this long, this 35-year relationship. Impossible.
I thought it was coming to an end several times. We were canceled at the end of the second season. I thought it's over. We came back for a third season and were canceled again. I thought, well, that's the end of that. Then the syndication happened. And we did the Star Trek motion picture. There was no plan to do a series of films. We kept meeting these endings and going on.
You're my best friend.
That, if it were for nothing else, right?
Yeah.
If it were nothing else, it would have been...
This makes it
worthwhile. Most worthwhile. Yeah.
Hey everybody, welcome back to thefandom.com. We've got a really fun actor for you today. He's a comedian and actor who's guest starred on Outer Limits, Sliders, Poltergeist, Andromeda, and SG-1, Stargate SG-1, which premieres this Friday. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome funny man Gary Jones. I know.
They're my favorite.
I know. I hope you have bodyguards with you. I'm sure that it's difficult, Gary.
Well, that was weird. When I first went to my very first convention, they actually escorted me to the bathroom.
Did they?
Oh, God. I was like, I just need to go to the bathroom. They're like, okay. And they were on the walkie-talkies. Yeah, can we get an escort to the bathroom with Gary, please? And I'm like, no, I just need to go pee. No. And the guy said,
that
Gary,
that's the scariest
please.
Part, yeah.
He goes, Gary, let me do my job. That's what he said. Gary, please, let me do my job. And I went, okay, fine.
Okay. If it's a man's job to take you to the bathroom, you should let him do it.
Oh, my God. And then he went in ahead of me and pushed open all the doors on the stalls.
Uh-huh.
And there was no one there, and he went, okay, Gary, go ahead.
God.
And that was my very first GateCon convention, my very first experience. I'd only just arrived at the hotel.
You big star.
Oh, my God. Now I know to pee before I go.
Exactly. And, you know, a guy could get used to that kind of thing. I mean, you don't need your kids going ahead of you to the bathroom clearing it out, you know? How are you?
I'm great.
Good.
I'm great.
Good. Welcome. We want to know all sorts
of
fun Stargate secrets.
You want fun Stargate secrets?
Yes, we do. First of all, tell us your fun story of being on the show. I think this is fun and inspiring, actually, for a lot of people. You first started on the show just basically... Well, as you still are now, but it's grown. You opened the Stargate.
Yeah.
Okay. And.
And I close it.
And you close it. Yes, Sergeant Walter Harriman. Tell us about your time on the show and how your role has grown.
Well, I auditioned for it. First of all, my agent said, this might be a recurring role.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's like, actors love to hear that. But at the same time, it's like, oh, my God, okay, I can't freak myself out because, if you do come back, you have no idea. People, usually up here in Canada, people think, oh, recurring role, I might come back for maybe 4 or 5 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've done like 80 episodes of Stargate. It's like unbelievable.
I know. It's amazing.
It's incredible. So
you've been on since the pilot.
Since the pilot.
Okay.
Since the pilot. And what happened was I walked into the audition and the director of the pilot is a guy named Mario Azzopardi, who's this big, kind of like loud Maltese guy. And I walk in the door and he goes, oh, you'd be perfect. Oh, you'd be perfect. Because he had just directed me in an episode of, I think it was Outer Limits, where I played like a ballistics expert. And I just came in and just blasted. I just kind of gave some information about a bullet or something.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he just liked what I did. So I don't know. It's like you never know who you're working with or how it's going to go.
That's very cool. So it was
and I walk in and I'm thinking, this is great. I've totally got this part.
Right.
Because, I mean, it's what any actor wants. You know, the guy, the director actually to be saying, you're perfect, I want this guy. So he starts explaining to me about the part, and at the time, the role was being modeled on a guy that was in the Stargate movie, who was this kind of computer expert who wore like Hawaiian shirts in amongst all the, you know, Air Force people, right?
Okay.
And he's kind of like these kind of like computer cowboy, like, I don't care about you Army guys, I'm just doing what I do. So he's telling me all this, and then he starts, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I got it. And then he starts. Sort of referencing this other guy from another, maybe, I think it was a James Bond movie or something, and I'm going, oh yeah, and I'm thinking to myself, I got this part, I don't really have to pay attention to what he's saying now.
Right, okay.
You know, he's basically just going to finish and then say, you have the part. Well, he doesn't, but then he starts going on and on. Then I realize, there's a point in the conversation where I realize, oh my God, he now wants to talk about it.
Okay.
And I've been nodding my head and going, oh, yeah, uh-huh, sure, yeah, looking like I know the movie, and I don't know what he's talking about.
Oh, boy.
So it went from actor's dream to, like, actor's nightmare.
Definitely.
And so finally I said, he goes, you know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about? And I go, no, I haven't got a clue. I never saw that movie. And he goes, you didn't see that movie? Then why am I wasting my time talking to you? I swear to God. And this, and I've never seen this happen before either. The casting agent was standing behind him, and I've never seen this to this day. She bit her knuckle at, like, laughing. She bit her hand. You know that sort of, like, cartoon laugh where they're going to go, and she sort of ducked down out of sight, laughing, standing behind him. And I go, I don't know, I just wanted to hear you talk. And he goes, okay, that's good. And like, it was like sort of pulling up out of like heading into like a brush fire.
That's so funny.
And then, and then the hilarious thing was that, you know, after giving me this huge like character breakdown and how I see this character and what you're gonna do, then he just sits me down and he hands me the sides and he goes, okay, so let's do the read. And it's me sitting there going, Chevron 1 encoded, Chevron 2 encoded, Chevron 3 encoded, Chevron 4 encoded.
That's
and it's
so
like
funny.
A grocery list.
That
there's
is
like
so
nothing
funny.
Else.
Well, you know, I mean, there are worse jobs, right?
Oh, well, I mean, it's turned into the most fantastic job.
Absolutely.
The studio is like 15 minutes from my house.
That's so wonderful. So you're Vancouver-based and from there?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so this, I've been here, I moved here from Ontario almost 20 years ago.
Wow.
And essentially, I've been working on Stargate SG-1 for like half that time. Like, it just blows my mind.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I came out to Ontario to perform with Second City.
Okay.
I started with Second City back in Toronto at the old fire hall, the place where like Martin Short and John Candy and Catherine O'Hara and all those guys started.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was there for 2 years, and
wow, that's incredible. So that was the place where John Candy and all those guys started, that Second City?
Yep.
Excellent.
Oh, there's pictures all over the joint of that. Well, the old fire hall is not there anymore. It was this old fire hall that they converted into this tiny, scroungy little theater, but it was like magic. Oh, my God. I used to go and watch those guys perform, and it was incredible.
That's so great.
And so then I find myself on the same stage as them, and... And then what happened was...
And then people are escorting you to the bathroom.
Next thing I know.
That's beautiful.
Helping me pee.
I'm telling you. History.
Shades of the old folks home in a couple of years.
You're just practicing. That's so beautifully empathetic of you to think of it that way.
Yeah.
Lovely. Well, we've already got a few questions for you. The one, and I think possibly the most important, so we could probably all go in a second, is how can you get a whole... How can the fans get a whole episode built around you? That's what they want to see.
How can they get that? God, you know what? The only thing I could imagine was if there was some big groundswell of support. Because when I go to the conventions, the fans go, when are you going through the gate? When are you going to be, you know, on a mission? Because
right.
I think they're kind of ready for that now. Like, I hear that a lot. But there's only so much I can say to the writers. Like, boy, be sure fun to go through that gate.
Yeah. Boy, I've been hanging outside for a while.
Yeah. Well, a couple of, like, I think there was a couple of episodes where I show up for work, and they go, and the crew people go, so you go, they call it going off world, right? They go, uh-huh. so you're going off world this episode, and I go, yeah, I know. I'm wondering if I go through the gate. And they go, no, you don't go through the gate. And I go, why? Why not? Well, it's too expensive. Because it's all like CGI stuff. So they go, yeah, they don't want to pay for you to go through the gate.
It's too expensive for you to go through the gate.
It's too expensive. So, in other words, you're just there.
All right.
It's like, so I don't get to walk up the ramp and go through the puddle.
Right.
But, you know, you're there.
I know.
Well, that's good enough.
That's how I think sometimes actors feel outside of, like, Paramount, you know, or I don't know, maybe some people feel outside the gates of heaven. I don't know. I mean, that's very frustrating, Gary.
Well, I stared at the gate for 9 years.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to get the fans to rally, okay? So you guys
that's
out there.
The only
there,
way you can do it.
Rally your support for Gary Jones to walk through that gate this season. Season 9 is going to be the time you're going to get through that gate. Dang it. And you're going to say...
Well, they've already promoted me beyond... Like, I can't be promoted anymore.
I know.
No, I started out as, like, a tech sergeant and a staff sergeant. Now I'm Chief Master Sergeant Walter Harriman.
Are you really?
Yeah, they give me Chief Master Sergeant. And apparently it's, like, the highest rank
Chief
that I
Master
can go
Sergeant.
For a non-commissioned officer.
Harriman, okay.
Yeah,
wow.
So what they also have done is they've made me that... They've given me that promotion,
mm-hmm.
and they gave me more medals and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they.
So the promotions, though, they also happen off screen, right?
Yeah. Oh,
these
yeah.
are not happening on screen. Okay, so we need something to happen. We need a promotion, or we need you to get through that.
Yeah,
date.
I came back. I came back season 9, and I'm a Chief Master Sergeant.
That's cool.
I was like, yeah, I took a couple of courses in the summer. You know, gate etiquette. You know, moving up the chevrons. You know, gate maintenance.
Right.
And you know, they're correspondence courses because I was up at the cabin.
Right, Walter Harriman. What
passed.
Did you do? Yes.
I did okay. I got 70% on my courses.
Okay, so it was pass fail maybe, or yeah, okay. We've got it. Well, okay.
And then I came back, and next thing I know, I'm a Chief Master Sergeant, and I'm also like Beau Bridges' assistant because what they made him the general.
Now,
so when he shows up, he's like, now he's like my third general.
That is my next question. Of course, there's all these. How is it working with? But how is it working with such a classic actor as Beau Bridges?
It's fantastic.
I bet.
It really is. I mean, it's easy to answer that question. He's a total pro. He looks fantastic on camera. He knows exactly what he's doing. And what's really great too is like to come into a show on season 9. It's like he's been there for ages. He's
yeah.
just,
that's
he's
fabulous.
He's not like a prima donna. He's not a demanding act. He's just your basic guy, and we talk, you know, like I'm in a lot of scenes with him, so I've spent downtime, you know, in between scenes just chatting about our kids and stuff that we've done, and he's like really approachable and really friendly. He's like no pretensions about the guy whatsoever.
That's great. And I know you don't work directly with him, but Lou Gossett Jr., my gosh, I mean, it's not, you know, it's only recently in the history of television, I think, that Academy Award winning actors have been doing television.
Yeah.
And now cable television, and
yep.
certainly, you know, your show is so well loved worldwide. It's worth, you know, it's certainly, you know, something that would be imagined. But this is incredible. I mean, he is such an incredibly classic actor. Tell me about him.
Well, to be honest, I don't think that you'd end up with such good actors if they didn't feel that they had good material to work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you got to source it back to the writing.
Right.
And Brad Wright and Robert Cooper, like the head of the story department, these guys are just like kind of like writing geniuses. And
right.
Brad Wright can look at a script and tell you what's wrong with it. And
right.
In, you know, in the five act. And he'll just do a rewrite and pound it out. And, you know, it's just great, great writing. And
right.
I think that has to have been, I mean, you can't. Imagine you can't just like have a show on for 9 years
mm-hmm.
with simply riding on the concept of a gate that opens up and goes to different.
Oh,
galaxies.
Sure, yeah.
You can't. It's impossible, right?
So no, I mean that
you
would
gotta back it up with the words and
right.
And
you could have covered that in the movie, you know.
Yeah. So I think the thing is, then you're going to end up with it's going to attract good actors because they go, hey, this is great stuff to work with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got to fire through some questions for you because I want to make sure that all these fans get their questions answered. Gary, do you
sure.
have a website?
What's that?
Do you have a website? I know that. Well, go on. Why don't you answer where people can find you best?
I do have a website, and I can't tell it to you right now because I don't know the... There's an official website,
right.
And then there's an unofficial website. You know what I could do is when we hang up, I will get your email.
We'll get all the website information to everybody. I just want to know where you exactly want people to, you know, to. I know that there's some that you can get pictures on, some that you can find information
on.
You
know
all
what?
Of that.
Here's the thing.
Yeah, where do you prefer? Because there's a whole bunch of stuff.
I'm on a message board.
Yeah.
I'm part of a message board where people can write in and ask questions. And there's a whole bunch of other Stargate-related people on that show. But if you go to a message board called Galaxy of Stars.
Right.
Andrew, go to Galaxy of Stars.
Andrew Clark.
Andrew Clark.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
Okay.
I'm on Andrew Clark's Galaxy of Stars message board.
Right.
And if you go in there, you can access... my official website through that.
Right. Okay. So. Because I know I came across a lot of different places where you can buy pictures, et cetera, but if there's one certain one that you want us to refer fans to for buying things like that, then absolutely let us know.
No. It's I don't actually sell pictures on my website.
There's a whole bunch of stuff out there for you. But anyway, I'm sure you know all that. Here's another question. Is Richard Dean Anderson in any episodes this coming season?
He will be, I think he's in because they're kicking off season 9, now, right?
Yes.
And the first two episodes, it's a two-parter,
mm-hmm.
Which is, because they needed two episodes to essentially introduce Ben Browder's character,
mm-hmm. right.
And, you know, also have some action-adventure, so they took a moment in that, in those two episodes to essentially pass the torch from Richard Dean to Bridges.
Yeah.
Okay. So he does appear, but
just preliminarily, so that
pretty
he can.
Much,
yeah,
that's
it.
All you're gonna get.
Okay. All right. Do you think that is there any word that he'll be back on the show at any point, or is he pretty much done?
He's done.
Okay. My goodness. Well,
yeah.
We are sorry to see him go. A few other questions. Fan related. Selmac wants to thank you for being at the Cleveland Vulcon. Do you have fun meeting your fans? Outside of the bathroom? That is?
Here's the thing. Because my background is comedy, I don't get a lot of chances to perform that much anymore. I got a pretty busy life here and... three kids and stuff, and
right.
So it's not like I go out and do stand-up or whatever, but so what I did was I decided that I would try and take the chance that I get when I see the fans,
mm-hmm.
to do a stand-up act, almost.
Right.
So that's what I've done. I've taken a bunch of my stories and my experiences at working on Stargate, and some of them, in retrospect, are pretty funny stories.
Are you doing?
But you just never. But it's right. Like, who are you going to really tell these stories to? Well, then I find out. Oh yeah, how about all the Stargate fans who are sitting in front of me?
Exactly.
You know? And so I just get up there and just like talk for an hour, and
it's like Stargate stand-up, huh?
It's like Stargate stand-up.
Yeah. I know.
And I've
Are you doing Stargate the Musical by any chance anytime soon? Come on, you owe it to your fans.
I owe it to my... Well, I did
you
do. I did do Star Trek the Musical.
I've heard.
Which was a takeoff of Star Trek. And I played Captain Kirk.
Yes.
And
our
Dean Haglund, who's a really, really old buddy of mine, go back a million performing years... Which in real life is like, God knows, it's like two lifetimes ago.
Uh-huh.
He played Spock.
A million performers, that's...
Yeah, yeah.
Worse than dog years,
it's different.
Really.
Performing time is different to real time.
Way worse.
Everyday, you know, working at Kinko's time.
Mm-hmm.
It's different.
Mm-hmm. Not sure in what way,
because you can age a lot faster on
I don't know, it's a toss-up there, but it's definitely different.
Yeah, it's really different. So
anyway,
Dean and I worked on that show, and that ran for 2 years,
and
oh
you
my
played.
God, it was so much fun.
You played Spock or Kirk?
I played Kirk.
You played Kirk.
Yeah,
okay.
I played Kirk.
Okay, we've got a whole bunch of other questions, but I cannot resist the opportunity here to ask you about William Shatner lent me his hairpiece.
Well, that was a buddy of mine, Ken Hegan, who is a filmmaker and a journalist up here. He had already made a short film called Farley Mowat Ate My Brother.
Okay.
And so then he was writing this other one called William Shatner Lent Me His Hairpiece, and it's about the premise is that this Keegan is a fan at a convention, and he saves William Shatner from some like overzealous fans.
Okay.
So I basically promise him anything. I go, I'll give you cars, money, and he goes, no, I want your hairpiece. Lend me your toupee. And I'm like, oh, you know, the best line in it was like, it's not a hairpiece, it's a hair system. and so I lend him my toupee, and of course it's like a chick magnet. And then he won't give it back.
Oh.
So now my career starts to die, and uh-huh. I'm losing it. So I've got to get it back, and then you know, then the battle ensues, and
it's like the mysterious hairpiece.
We get in a big fist fight, and he pulls my shirt off, and I'm wearing a girdle. it's really ugly, but
Captain,
pretty funny.
Oh no,
pretty funny, and it won a whole pile of awards. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's what you told me. Now this award won festival awards, or
festival awards, short film festival.
Okay,
awards.
Great.
It's won a bunch. So.
And now where can we get this? Because now we have to see it. William Shatner Lent Me His Hairpiece.
Well, strangely enough, Hegan didn't know what to do with it. So I phoned him up one day and I said, hey, I go to all these conventions. Why don't I like try and sell your film at these conventions?
Right.
So I have a whole pile of DVDs that when I go to these conventions now I have with me.
Okay.
So next, you know, whenever people see me at the conventions, I'll have it with me, and it's like, you know, I'll sign it and everything. And so that's where I know you can definitely get it, is from me. I don't know where else you would get it.
You've got a monopoly on William Shatner's Lent Me His Hairpiece.
Not really a monopoly, but more like an oligopoly.
Oh, okay. Let me get out my thesaurus. Okay. That sounds like fun. I know another, another couple of fun things, shorts that you've done. Well, first, you know what, let me stay on the Kirk thing first, and then we'll get to these other questions. Can you please do your Kirk impersonation for us? Everyone's got one. We want to hear yours.
Oh, everybody's got one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
sorry. Now the pressure's on.
All right, here we go. Sure, Chase. Yeah. It's really fantastic being on this show. You know, because the fact is, when you called me, I was sitting at home writing another tech war novel.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I could not, for the life of me, come up with a tech war premise.
Okay. All right. I'm sure he could. Now that he's Emmy-winning, I'm not sure he's sitting around writing tech war novels.
Yeah, he's an Emmy-winning novelist.
All right. Exactly. We want your feedback, guys, on the William Shatner impersonation by Gary Jones. Meanwhile, would you please sing the Stargate anthem?
What is this? I don't know
Stargate.
What it is.
The theme to Stargate. We've got a request for you to sing the theme to Stargate.
Oh, you mean this? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
That's beautiful.
I do that when I come on stage now.
Oh, excellent.
I basically give myself my own soundtrack.
Excellent. You need your own soundtrack. And if it's not the Gary Jones soundtrack, which would probably have, I don't know, toilet flushing or something, at least you can sing the Stargate.
Oh, yeah.
Soundtrack.
Hey, you know what? You know Dean Haglund? You had him on the show, right?
Yes, we did.
Because he was one of the lone gunmen?
Yes.
Yeah. Dean Haglund and I both auditioned to be in the lone gunmen.
You did?
Yeah, we auditioned. We were buddies, both living in Vancouver.
Uh-huh.
We got a call to go for the X-Files audition.
Uh-huh.
And Dean got the part that he ended up with, Langley,
uh-huh.
And I auditioned for the other part that Bruce Harwood ended up getting, but we were in the same room auditioning to be Lone Gunman.
Excellent.
And I didn't get it.
I'm sorry.
You know, and I was like, oh, so choked.
So choked.
I phoned him that afternoon. I go, did you hear anything? He goes, yeah, I'm cast. I'm like, what? They called you, like, right away?
He told me it was pretty fast.
Oh, he got home and he had the part. He, like, drove home, had the part. And I'm just pacing my apartment, not
don't
getting
you love
the call,
it.
Not, and I didn't get it.
I'm sorry.
And,
but you have another X-Files connection as well. I'm just going to keep this moving. You worked with William B. Davis
yeah.
in Snakehead Terror.
Oh.
Tell us about
Snake
at
Terror.
Yeah,
which was actually on the Sci-Fi Channel.
I know.
Snake at Terror was the... Oh, my God, it was hilarious.
Tell us about filming that.
Well, it was about... Essentially, it's about these actual... These snakehead fish actually exist. They're like carnivorous, part carp, part, like, piranha.
Okay.
And they're from China.
Okay.
And essentially, wherever they are, they destroy the entire ecosystem.
Okay.
They're flesh-eating fish, and they eat everything in sight.
Okay.
But here's the thing about them. They have these, like, really powerful pectoral fins.
Okay.
Whereby they can actually crawl out of water and drag themselves along the ground and breathe air.
Right.
So what they do is they're like these perfect kind of like killing machines. What they do is they eat everything in one pond, and then they crawl out of the water to another pond once everything's destroyed because there's nothing else to eat.
So they
walk to the next pond.
They do.
Yeah, and I remember reading about this in a magazine once. Just like it's kind of neat. And people say it was like an ecological disaster, and you got these guys down in Louisiana, all these fish and wildlife game preserve guys, just sitting in their trucks at night with shotguns, and as soon as they see these fish crossing the road, they just blow them away.
So I read
about that. Meanwhile, somebody writes a movie about it.
Now, this is a true story in Louisiana, I'm to take it?
Yeah, it's a true story. It's based on a true story. These fish actually exist. But, of course, in the film I'm in,
uh-huh.
I'm the guy who, because, you know, it takes place at a little lake,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the business is down, and nobody's fishing, is sport fishing. So I dump human growth hormones into the lake to try and grow the fish faster.
Got it.
I end up growing the snakeheads faster, and they start, like, killing everything, including humans. And I end up getting killed, you know, eaten by the very thing that I'm starting to grow.
Well, there you go, Gary.
Yeah.
Right back to you.
Right back.
You know what happens now when that happens. That'll show you. That'll teach you. Okay, so we've got the fish mutating and surviving the chemical poisonings of the lake, and the fish transformed from pests. It says on IMDb, from pests to predators when human growth hormones are dumped into the lake. Okay.
Yeah, they go from like so this is average-sized fish to like these gigantic, like they're like sharks.
All right. So you guys
they grow huge.
Okay.
And Bruce Boxleitner's in that film, too.
He is. He is.
And he's the local sheriff. And William B. Davis, cigarette man,
mm-hmm.
cancer man,
mm-hmm.
plays my brother.
Okay.
He's the local doctor who gives me the growth hormones, and I go dump them in the lake.
Little did he know.
The two of us, we destroy.
Dang.
You know, kill people.
I'm sure that's against a few laws. How was it working with Bruce?
Bruce is great. Bruce
yeah.
is like really, really, God, just really friendly,
mm-hmm.
like joking around,
mm-hmm.
fun, you know.
Yeah.
Funny, you know, you see all these people and...
Yeah, he's a good guy.
You have no idea what they're going to be like.
He's a really good guy.
A long time ago, I stopped kind of being impressed or being all kind of wowed because I thought, well, you know what? If I'm in this film, there's a reason I'm in this film, and I'm just, you know, I'm good enough to be in this film with this person kind of thing.
Exactly. And you're the guy that supplied the killer growth hormones. You're the guy that supplied the killer growth hormones. That's,
well, yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's always like when you chat in between scenes, it's like uh-huh. then you get to see what the person's really like. And,
exactly.
Like I worked on a film called Trixie with Emily Watson and Nick Nolte, and Nick Nolte was, oh my God, he's insane.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, here's, you know, he's a big movie star. He's going to be, you know, and he was just like, oh, whoa, he's nuts.
Couldn't
talk to him.
Interesting. Okay. Well, more on Nick Nolte later, possibly. We want to ask, are you enjoying Season 9? Now, how many have you shot of Season 9, Stargate, yet?
I think they're on, like, for, like, Episode 8, maybe?
Okay.
Like 8 or 9? And I think I've shot, like, 7. Like, I think I've only missed one episode of that so far.
Excellent. Okay, great. Now, are you on the boards for any more in Season 9?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
There's upcoming episodes that I haven't even got the scripts for yet.
Great. Now, Amanda's back.
Amanda had a baby.
Right. Have you spoken with her, or have you...
Have I what?
Have you spoken with her? I mean, I'm sure you've seen her on the set, and is she glad to be back?
Oh, yeah, she's totally glad to be back, and she has her baby on the set with a little, you know, nanny helping her out, and then, you know, she'll be... she'll be feeding her baby, and they'll go, okay, Amanda, you're in this scene, and then she'll just run in and do her scene and then run out. And
very cool.
So she doesn't really hang out on the set or anything. She's like, she comes in, does her work, and Amanda's like a total pro. Oh, my God. She was telling me about when she got pregnant, and, you know, she said her memory started to go, and she couldn't remember her lines.
Huh.
And, of course, she's the one who's like the science geek
right.
officer, and she has all this, like, jargon, and she still pulls it off.
Yeah. She's good.
I think the first scene I worked with her back, that I was in with her, she had to just unload all this stuff, and, man, she nailed it every time.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, she
That's
is.
That's fabulous. Okay, we have another fan that says, Kitiara, it says, I understand you were born in Wales. Is
yep.
that true?
It's true.
Okay.
Yeah, I was born in Swansea, South Wales.
I read that, but I wasn't sure. Can you say Chevron 1 encoded in Welsh or Gaelic?
Well, I can say it in a Welsh accent.
Can you?
Yeah.
Can you say it? Okay, go ahead.
Who's that? Oh, Chevron 1 encoded. Now go on, put the kettle on, let's have some tea.
They're spooky, those Welsh, aren't they? No offense to any Welshers out there, but did I say that right, Welshers? But
wrong.
But they like to talk like that, don't they?
Oh, yeah. It's very kind of like, how's it going? Hello, Chase. Lovely to be on your show.
Yeah.
If you hear it, like if you hear Anthony Hopkins is Welsh, and he's got a kind of a lilt of his, but man, if you go back and visit the relatives, everybody talks like this.
Yeah.
Really slow, like they're on kind of some kind of drug.
I think they have some sort of little secret. I don't know what it is yet, but I think the Welsh have some little secret.
It's pretty funny.
It's
a hilarious accent. I mean, I came over here when I was 14, and I had to ditch that accent immediately.
Now, I'm sure
it was
you did.
Like, you know, nobody knew. See, the thing is, everybody knew what a Scottish or an English accent was, and that was sort of acceptable. But when you're in the beginning of your teen years, you come to a new high school, and you're talking like this. Hello.
I don't think
Hello.
So.
Sorry, I can't find where the science lab is.
No.
You know, forget it. It was like, I didn't even talk for 6 months.
That will not get you dates.
No.
And
ironically, my wife tells me, she said, you know what? You should have really kept the accent.
You think?
Oh, yeah. She said, man, if you kept the accent.
Did that turn her on?
A couple of years later, the chicks would have been flocking.
Really?
Yep.
Dang. You could put it back.
I had to get rid of it.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Well, I mean, if your wife wants the chicks to flock to you, I don't know what to say about that.
No, I was complaining that I never went on dates or I didn't know anybody in high school. And, you know, I just very unsure of myself and not confident. And, you know, the accent really didn't help my case.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
That is so funny. We would not have guessed.
Yeah.
A few more questions. Daniel wants to know, how did you feel about your character's role in season 8 of SG-1? You've certainly, you know, your role has grown, and you know, how does that come about? Have you talked to the producers about that, or
no, I don't, no. What's happened is I think that they got to, because I'm just like, through pure longevity of being on the show,
mm-hmm.
they all got to know me personally.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think anyway, and I think that they've known that, I mean, they, you know, they give me more and more things to do, to act, and as long as I can pull them off, coupled with the fact that they know that I'm, you know, I've got like a comedic background, they started giving me more kind of like slightly quirky, funny lines, and
okay.
you know, and I would do it in the style that worked for Stargate, and then they just kind of gave me more and more. So each time I would sort of prove myself, and they
Excellent.
Went for it. So
Excellent.
They ended up giving me more. Like there was one episode I did where it was called Prometheus Unbound.
Okay.
Where I actually traveled in a spaceship and repaired an alien spaceship and fired
right.
rockets and did all sorts of stuff.
Right. You
so they just they got
one.
Me to do like tons of stuff there.
So you're the technical guy.
So season 8 was kind of like a bit of a quantum leap, and now season 9, I'm just doing way more. And actually, what's interesting too is to actually be called by your character name, like Bo now. Whenever he sees me, he's like, when he comes into the control room, he's like, okay, what do we got, Walter? What's the problem, Chief?
Like, Bo's calling you Walter.
What's that?
Yeah, Bo's calling you Walter.
Bo's calling me Walter. And that's a huge deal. For any actor listening to this would know, like, if you go from, like, you know, hey, Sergeant, to hey, Walter.
Right.
you're like getting more and more cemented in the landscape.
That's true. Now, Selmec says you didn't do CPR on Hammond when he collapsed in Prometheus Unbound.
Did
you want to just leap right in there and start to do the CPR?
No, I didn't do the CPR. Strangely enough,
no, you didn't. That's what she said.
The guy
who
did CPR was the head of SG3. It was a buddy of mine, Eric Brecker, and Eric. That was a great moment where he basically wants the general to wake up because he's unconscious, and we're all like, because he's going, sir, sir, and we go, well, you gotta give him, you know, mouth to mouth, and he's like, oh my god, and like he sort of looks at us like that's more panicky to him than anything,
right?
And then myself and Ellie Harvey, we look at each other like, oh, we're not doing it. And then the general wakes up and Eric's just hugging him going, oh, sir, it's so great that you woke up. It's pretty funny, but the look on Eric's face when he realizes in about 2 seconds he's going to be kissing the general, his face drains.
Ouch. Gosh, I can imagine. Yeah, it's just not a Stargate kind of thing. Maybe some other shows, but... Well, Selmec says you could have gotten a medal if you'd just jumped right in there. But
true.
Maybe next time.
Yeah, it's hard to just jump in when the writers haven't written it that way.
That's so true, isn't it? Dang.
You know what I mean?
Doesn't really work that way.
No,
does
it? I think I would do this. I know you didn't write this this way, but I'm going to do it anyway.
And Walter saves the day.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, you never know. Maybe next time. Did you know there are words to the SG-1 song?
No.
Okay, I've just been emailed words to the SG-1 song. Okay, would you be able to possibly sing those words if I email them to you?
If you email them to me, like right now?
Yeah, like right now.
Okay.
Is that too weird?
No, I'll give it a go.
Oh, but you know what? You can't give me your email address. Okay.
I'm at my computer.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's see. I could either email them to you, but then everyone would have your email address.
Yeah.
Or I could just tell you the words. Stargate. There's like 8 A's. It's a crazy world with a great big squirrel and a step inside to another world. We're talking Stargate. It's a crazy trip. Do you know this song?
No.
Okay.
No, but man, why do you need me to sing it?
I know.
We got you.
Well, I'm not on tune here because I just wouldn't know how to do that. You can go quite far and you don't need a car or even a ship. There's Colonel Neil and Carter and Danielle and Teal. I'm going to cry.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there's a whole Stargate song.
Yeah, no, I don't know it.
You don't know it?
No.
Okay, maybe you can learn it and you can sing it at the next GateCon. I just wanted you to be aware.
Yeah, when we finish, you're going to email that to me.
I will do that. I will do that. Okay, let's see. Mr. Jones, how do you feel about the fan-given name Chevron Guy?
Oh, touched. Absolutely. It's very sweet.
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what it really says is that everybody wants to, you know, they wanted to, like, connect with my character, but the writers weren't giving them a name to work with, so they just came up with their own.
No, that's true.
And for years, it was Chevron Guy. Actually, you know, it's funny, when I was going to say that when I went to that first GateCon, the one where, you know, the guy helped me go for a pee, they were all going, Chevron Guy! And I was like, oh, my God.
Yay. That's it's very fond and wonderful of the fans to do that.
Yeah, it was very sweet.
It was very sweet.
So I have great fondness for that name, although I'm now kind of further and further away from it, like, because...
You're Walter.
Because I've got a name.
Now you're Walter, says Beau. Yeah. All right, so... Mr. Jones, 7th season's Lost City was originally going to be a theatrical movie, but I haven't heard any news since it was reworked as the season 7 finale. Are you aware of this? And is there any news of an SG-1 movie in the works? Which I think would be great.
No, not that I know of.
Okay.
I mean, I'd heard, you know, every once in a while of something something being said, but then then it was like, no. They were thinking about whether or not they were actually going to I think when they were deciding to do season 8, they mm-hmm. were maybe gonna do a movie, but then
right.
season 8 happened, so it
right.
didn't happen.
Right, nine seasons of a show is just so amazing. We were talking about that with Tom Vitale last week, and it's just such a credit to the show itself and to the cast, you know, to keep with it, to be that strong for so long.
Oh yeah.
Tell us
yeah,
about
absolutely.
Well,
I mean, it's gone beyond sci-fi history, you know. Mm. It's like, it's now it's like television. It's like such a long-running show just on its own. Forget sci-fi.
Good.
I don't mean forget sci-fi the channel. I mean forget sci-fi the genre.
Should we just forget it? Okay, it's forgotten, I guess. Okay, no, I agree. I mean, this is certainly the longest, isn't it? I guess it is the longest running sci-fi show in history, unless you count, you know, all of the repeat appearances on Star Trek, but that's you know, certainly different shows.
Right.
Fabulous. Tell us about when you guest starred in an episode of Atlantis.
Of what?
Of Stargate Atlantis.
Yeah, but no, well...
Just one.
Not really guest starred. I mean, it was, like, pretty funny. I just handed a piece of paper to somebody saying, yeah, you got, like, here's your marching orders or something. Here's your transfer papers. And it was, like, really minimal. I mean, it was hilarious that I was on that episode.
Hey, people are watching. It's absolutely true.
I know, but...
It's absolutely true.
But it was a tiny, tiny thing that I did. So I didn't really get a sense of the... you know, of the Atlantis feel.
I understand.
It was like in another hallway that was
right.
The same as the SG-1 hallway.
Right.
Oh, hey, you know what?
Yes.
I just thought of something.
Hmm.
On when they launch SG-1.
Mm-hmm.
Hang on one second. I'm going to be talking to you
okay.
while I'm comforting my boy.
Okay.
Okay. Can you hang on a sec?
We got it.
I got to do this.
Okay.
Hang on a sec.
Meanwhile, everybody out there, we've got about 5 more minutes with Gary, so you guys ask us questions if you can, if you got anything else. We've just got about 5 more minutes. We've got something here from Daniel. Says there's one American sci-fi show that ties with SG-1 in terms of longevity, and that's X-Files. That is true. If SG-1 returns for season 10, it'll be the longest-running American sci-fi show in television history. So... that is something that's actually the historical thing. I guess, however, X-Files was on a network, Fox, and since Stargate SG-1 is on sci-fi, it would definitely be the longest-running sci-fi show on a cable network. X-Files is, at this point, the longest-running show on a network, on a mainstream network. Are you there, Gary?
Hello, yes, I'm
Hello.
Here.
Okay, we're just discussing the longevity of Stargate, and... that X-Files is currently tied with SG-1 in terms of longevity. Because it
oh, I guess we have to go to season 10 then.
9 years on Fox, exactly. You got to go to season 10. Do you think you can do it, Jones?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. All right.
What I was going to tell you is that on the evening where they launch season 9,
mm-hmm, Friday,
on Sci-Fi, they do like a little, I think they're doing like some kind of little promo piece.
Right.
Talking about SG-1 and Atlantis, and they got me to do like a walk and talk through the set.
Mm-hmm.
So fans can watch for that too, because basically I just improvised the whole thing. Like they built this massive village whereby the SG-1 set used it and the Atlantis set used it.
Right.
And they said just do a walk and talk and just like whatever you feel like saying. So it was really fun just to do that. It was like
very fun.
Yeah, so watch for that, too, because I get to do that in my navy blue flight suit.
Oh, that is very fun. Good
yeah.
for you. Good
yeah.
for you. Okay, so that premieres this Friday, 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 Central.
Yeah.
That's going to be a lot of fun, Stargate, and that's, of course, I'm sorry, that premieres at 7 o'clock Central, and that is followed by Stargate Atlantis at 8 o'clock Central. So you guys
right.
want to stay tuned for that. We got another couple questions. Liefshin asks, what are Sci-Fi's plans possibly broadcasting older series and movies? Do you know anything about that?
Nope.
Man and Machine or The World Stood Still? I don't know about that. In our conversation with Tom Vitale last week, and I want to really encourage you guys to log on to that if you didn't see that. If you didn't hear that live, log on to that in the archives. We've got some great archives for you there at fandom.com. Tom has a lot to say about Sci-Fi Channel's programming and why they program the way that they do, and it's really enlightening. I think they've got a great thing going, but this will really open your eyes to some more of the network, you know, the network's understandings and you know, the reasoning on the shows. So there you go. They want to know about Amanda Tapping returning in the 6th episode. Is that true? She's in the 6th episode?
She took 6 weeks off. It's 6 weeks into the into season 9, and then she comes back.
Right. Okay.
So they just build some story around her that she's at some other place.
So in the 6th week. And finally, how did you enjoy working with Claudia Black and Ben Browder?
Well, I'm still working with Ben Browder, mm-hmm. and he's great. Claudia Black's really sweet. She has this look about her, you know, with like the dark hair and the streak of color down the front, and mm-hmm. For some reason, she looks like she's this kind of action adventure. You get a whole different thing from when you actually talk to her. She's like really funny, really sweet, and I wasn't in any scenes really with her,
mm-hmm.
but Ben Browder. But I know that she's like a really sweet person, and then Ben Browder's great. He's like he's very friendly, easy to work with. I mean, it's a complete. What can I say in wrapping up? Is that it's a complete dream job for me.
Right.
And I'll be there as long as they continue calling me and asking me to show up for work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we sure enjoy watching you on it. You can tell you've got a lot more fans than even you realized, you know, watching every move that Walter Harriman makes. So there you go, Chief Master Sergeant Harriman.
Master Sergeant.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're really excited. I will absolutely encourage the fans when we leave. I want you guys to stay tuned with me out there in fandom land because we've got another couple things after Gary goes. But Gary, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it was great. I'm happy to have been on the show. It was really fun talking to you.
And thank you.
Like I said, if the fans that are listening to this show want to go visit Galaxy of Stars, that message board, they can actually send me questions directly, and I always check it and write back. So they can be in touch.
That's the UK-based galaxyofstars.com.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Hey, thank you
so
much. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
I had a great time.
Knock 'em dead and always get a walk to the bathroom. Okay?
I can go on my own now. I think I'm
Oh, can you? Okay, good.
Talk to you later.
Glad to hear it. Okay, take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye. Hey, everybody, you still out there? Okay, I want to, I just want to ask you, because this is our second fandom show with a Stargate guest, and we're certainly going to have more of them because this is groundbreaking history for any sci-fi show on television. I want to really encourage you guys to let us know at thefandom.com, and you can write me, chase@thefandom.com. What guests do you like to have over the summer, and particularly what Stargate guests do you like us to have? We're also going to be hopefully featuring some actors from Battlestar Galactica, and in continuing our Sci-Fi Channel block, getting some actors from the movies of the week. So please be sure and let us know what you guys want to see and hear, because we're interested and we really want to give you guys what you guys want. If you guys have any more questions, feel free to email me. Meanwhile, Gary had to split a little bit early, but we sure enjoyed that show with him. And stay tuned for many more, because we're going to have more guests, as I said, from Sci-Fi Channel, Stargate, Battlestar Galactica, and all your favorite Sci-Fi Channel shows and movies, okay? This is Chase Masterson signing off for thefandom.com. We'll see you next Monday at 4 p.m. Looking forward to it. In the meantime, do email me, and I will talk to you then, all right? Thanks so much, everybody. Bye.
Two men, passionate actors, closest of friends. Born just 4 days apart, they share more than just being of the same generation, but a legacy that helped to define many generations. Now, they can finally look back with the only other person on the planet who can truly identify with their amazing journey. To boldly go where neither man has gone before, and along the way, reveal the secrets behind the voyage of a lifetime.
This is the most personal insight that they'll get into, certainly into this relationship, and into aspects of myself and Bill that they've never been aware of, never been privy to before.
I got divorced in the middle of the series, and took affection from wherever I could find it. Not every week from every one of those beautiful girls who were on our show.
In an unprecedented one-on-one conversation filmed at Leonard Nimoy's home, the two most popular actors in the Star Trek universe share never-before-told stories about 35 years of friendship, fellow cast members, and the public and private impact the historic entertainment franchise has had on their lives.
They were contract people. Studying to see how much are we paying him, and if he asks for any more, tell him we'll get somebody else to wear the ears, that kind of thing. He wants a phone in his dressing room. Is it in the contract? No. No phone. No. And there was no give. There was no dealing in a familial way. That made me very confused.
And angry.
Very angry. And I went into therapy over it.
Our lives have followed very similar patterns in our marriages, our children, our financial circumstances, our emotional circumstances, our careers. So it's interesting to see Star Trek and our lives from each other's perspectives.
Here's my Vulcan.
Oh, no, Leonard. Vulcan, the USS Vulcan.
Yeah.
Did they name it after the
Coast Guard ship? Coast Guard ship. Called the Vulcan.
And then you got the Enterprise.
Well, of course.
This whole house is dedicated to Star Trek.
No, not the whole house. Just a little corner.
Both Shatner and Nimoy agreed the only format that would allow them to share the most private details of their lives was an intimate discussion without any moderator.
No way anybody could predict this journey, this long, this 35-year relationship. Impossible.
I thought it was coming to an end several times. We were canceled at the end of the second season. I thought it's over. We came back for a third season, and we canceled again. I thought, well, that's the end of that. Then the syndication happened, and we did the Star Trek motion picture. There was no plan to do a series of films. We kept meeting these endings and going on.
You're my best friend.
That if it were for nothing else, right?
Yeah.
If for nothing else, it would have been
this makes it worth
most worthwhile.
Right.
Two men, passionate actors, closest of friends. Born just 4 days apart, they share more than just being of the same generation, but a legacy that helped to define many generations. Now, they can finally look back with the only other person on the planet who can truly identify with their amazing journey. To boldly go where neither man has gone before. And along the way, reveal the secrets behind the voyage of a lifetime.
This is the most personal insight that they'll get into, certainly into this relationship. And into aspects of myself and Bill that they've never been aware of, never been privy to before.
I got divorced in the middle of the series and took affection from wherever I could find it. Not every week from every one of those beautiful girls who were on our show.
In an unprecedented one-on-one conversation filmed at Leonard Nimoy's home, the two most popular actors in the Star Trek universe share never-before-told stories about 35 years of friendship, fellow cast members, and the public and private impact the historic entertainment franchise has had on their lives.
They were contract people studying to see, how much are we paying him? And if he asks for any more, tell him we'll get somebody else to wear the ears, that kind of thing. He wants a phone in his dressing room. Is it in the contract? No. No phone. No. And there was no give. There was no dealing in a familial way. That made me very confused.
And angry.
Very angry. And I went into therapy over it.
Our lives have followed very similar patterns in our marriages, our children, our financial circumstances, our emotional circumstances, our careers. So it's interesting to see Star Trek and our lives from each other's perspectives.
Here's my Vulcan.
Oh,
no, Leonard. Vulcan, the USS Vulcan.
Yeah.
Did they name it after
the Coast Guard ship? Coast Guard ship. Called the Vulcan.
And then you got the Enterprise.
Well, of course.
This whole house is dedicated to Star Trek.
No, not the whole house. Just a little corner.
Both Shatner and Nimoy agreed the only format that would allow them to share the most private details of their lives was an intimate discussion without any moderator.
No way anybody could predict this journey, this long, this 35-year relationship. Impossible. I thought it was coming to an end several times. We were canceled at the end of the second season. I thought it's over. We came back for a third season, and we canceled again. I thought, well, that's the end of that. Then the syndication happened. And we did the Star Trek motion picture. There was no plan to do a series of films. We kept meeting these endings and going on.
You're my best friend.
That, if it were for nothing else, right?
Yeah.
If for nothing else, it would have been...
This makes it worth
most worthwhile.
Right.